You are now listening to Mix Mag on Rotation, the world's dance music destination.
Welcome back to On Rotation, Mix Mag's weekly podcast, bringing you the latest news, premieres, and interviews from the world of dance music. I'm Valerie from LA.
And I'm Harrison here in Brooklyn.
And this is On Rotation.
This week, we're diving deep into the underground to chat with a freshly emerging artist out of South Korea who broke through in 2016 with a string of releases on Rekid's Technicolor and Fonica White. We are, of course, talking about the lovely and talented Peggy Gu.
Peggy currently lives in Berlin, although this year she has been traveling pretty much all over the world. She did a tour through the United States. She's touring currently through Asia, all over Europe. And she's an artist that I think is catching a lot of attention, not only because of her production abilities and, you know, great musical taste, but also because she's very interesting as just like a personality and a character. Yeah. She fully embraces her look. She, you know, she comes from actually a fashion background, so she has a really bold, kind of funky style.
Yeah.
And she really lets that shine, you know, on her Instagram. You can see where she kind of has her inspirations fashion-wise, and she's covered in tattoos, but she totally embraces it. And it's really refreshing for the time where we're in right now in electronic music, where we're always talking about, you know, the role of a woman in dance music. And she's very confident in who she is as a person. And I love that.
And then you go with her music. She gets pretty funky. I've been following her for a while now. She had a really standout release on Technicolor last year, Seek to Mac Toop EP, which included the track Goo Talk that has been just absolutely everywhere. Everybody's still playing it. I still play it. And then also her release on Fonica White, which is a record that never leaves my bag. I love her acid. I love her funk. I love her electro. She's very versatile and she's really taken off.
Yeah, she's a great, great person. Super sweet. And we had a great time talking to her. She also played our Lab on Location in Miami, which happened on the One Hotel rooftop in South Beach.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a little chat about, you know, where she's come and to where she is today.
You are now listening to Mix Mag on Rotation. Hot takes on the latest dance music news, tunes, parties, and more.
We are sitting here with Peggy Gu, a breakout artist fresh from South Korea. And it's a very exciting time in her career. So I'm going to ask, can you tell us about yourself and where you grew up?
Only memory that I have in Korea is my life before when I was 14, when I was in elementary school and middle school. Then there was a time in 2009, I think 2009, that I went back to Korea because I was also not doing very well in London. So my parents thought, you know what, you have to come back. In Korea, when I was 14, I don't have that many memories. You know, I was just normal kids in middle school that wasn't really doing well in school. And the only other memory that I would talk about is that when I came back to Korea, I went back because I wasn't doing really well in school. And then my parents tried to send me to university in Korea. Well, I went to high school before, but then I realized the way they study is like 17 hours per day, and they study after school. They have to stay in school until the night. I don't know. Maybe it's the Korean thing. Then I realized, what am I doing here? They were teaching all these things that doesn't interest me, like mathematics, my biology. I don't know. I felt like this is not what I want to do. After 2 years, I told my parents I want to go back to London. My dad was like, no way, you're not going back. And my mom was like, you find your own way and prove me, then I will send you back. So I was like, you know what? I will prove you. So I made my own portfolio, like making all the artwork. And I called one of those UAM, and I got in. And I got the letter saying that, congratulations, you will do the foundation course. And so I showed to my mom. Ta-da! And my mom was like, okay, I'll send you. But that was the time when I came back to London, was 2010. And I was already 19, so I was not underage, so I didn't have to live with guardian anymore. So that was a time that I was quite free, went to university, I started doing well, and no problems with parents, you know? But before that, I'm also kind of person who, if you want to put me, like lock me, I would do my best to just to get out of there, you know what I mean? That's the memory I have. One more thing to add, I met my first love in 2008, he was a DJ. That was a time I wasn't really interested in anything about the DJ, but then I got to know how DJs prepare music before he go to the show, or how he dig, you know, all this thing. So I remember the very first time I touched vinyls and turntable was like 2008. there's still the pictures of me sitting on the floor, turntable, not even on the this level, like on the floor, I'm trying to do it. I'm thinking, why can I not get this right?
That's great. It's like something that really challenges you.
Yeah. And I'm really thinking sometimes, like, how would he feel to see me being a DJ now? You know, like, this is my full-time job now.
So you talked about going to London and you said you met a crew. Mm-hmm. Would you say that that was what inspired you to start an actual career in music?
Inspired? I don't know. But because we had to do parties every Thursday, sometimes with guests, sometimes without the guests. And being a resident, some DJ teaches you a lot of things. I learned a lot because you need to be able to play for either it's one person or pack or 10 people, you know, and it's not easy. And also because you're playing different slots, you need to learn how to warm up. And that's another mistake that I used to do because I didn't know how to warm up and I was playing for myself. I learned a lot through that party. I wasn't able to look at the crowd or I would play a track that I would never, if I think about it now, I'm like, this is definitely not a 10 p.m. track. And then I would used to play that. Through that, a lot of mistakes and experience, I learned a lot. And then I realized every Thursday, I was like, I can't wait for Thursday because I want to play. So I decided to take a step forward thinking that, you know, I need to make a music if I want to do this seriously. That's why I started to take a lesson in London.
Tell me more about the process of learning how to make music.
Well, I met this guy called Issa at Corsica Studio, one of those clubs that I used to go because when I was in London, I used to go to good parties all the time and learn, watch the DJs and hear the music, how they mix. That's how I learned a lot. One of those clubs I used to go to called Corsica Studio, I met him, Issa, and somehow we were Facebook friends, and he saw that I was collecting vinyls and I play. I think he noticed that I'm not doing this as a hobby. And he suggested me, do you want to learn music? In the beginning, I was like, I don't know. Then when I noticed, and when I realized, okay, I have to, I contacted him saying, hey, I wanna learn music. So I went to his studio. And he was actually a person who DJ, who's working as a producer and who also works in Ableton. So I started to learn Ableton lesson and I was studied to not going to university. So I failed the course and my parents didn't let me come back to Korea. So I know you don't need this degree, but if you fail, you don't come back. That's why I had to finish the course and doing the studio at the same time. So it was not easy for me. But then more I go to studio, I realize this is what I really want to do. And I even remember one time I was visiting my friend in Berlin and I made this track without nothing, no synthesizer, no drum machine, nothing. I just made this track with my headphone, with all the samples I have, came back to London. I was like, hey, Issa, I made this track, check it out. And it was like samples of this Korean instrumental called Gayageum. And he was like, this should be your signature sound. It sounds great. And since then, I started to collect MIDI keyboard. You know, like I started to collect everything one by one. And by the time I moved to Berlin, I didn't have to go to school. I didn't have anything else to do so I could focus on music. So since then, I was making demos. My one of the mistakes in the beginning was that I was stuck with this, okay, I want to finish this track. And it took a long time for me to finish it because sometimes I'm like, what's next? Okay, I made this drum. Okay, I made this bass line, but I don't know what's next. But I now know that I need to move on sometime. And then sometime you can go back and finish it.
That's cool. I appreciate that you find something and you're just like, I want to learn it.
Yeah, it can be a good thing and bad thing because sometime I'm like, I can be too much. But if I want it, I will do anything to get that.
As you were coming up in the early years of your career, it seemed like your parents disagreed with you. That's like the stereotype of Asian parents wanting you to become a doctor, which I imagine could have been really hard because then you moved to London and Berlin and met people whose families were very supportive of creativity and music. Do you sense that that played a big role in your life, not having a musical upbringing?
If I be honest, I didn't have proper like education beside the piano lesson, but my mom and dad is always, my brother, some people think that my brother is pianist, and my mother sings very well. She always play guitar, and my dad always plays guitar and sings sometimes. And when this time, when I went back to Korea last summer, he was studying drum. I was like, what is going on? And he was playing drums upstairs. So I would say my parents all my family is into music, but I didn't have that in background. I'm also lucky is because, as you said, a lot of Asian parents are quite conservative and they want your kids to be either doctors and professors. And my dad is a professor. And my brother and my mom, and their business, you know, they're very different to me. And I'm the black sheep in the family, you know? And in the beginning, they were like, what is DJ? Because they, you know, for their generation, they don't know what DJ is. What do you do? Why do you have to work at night? And then, you know, what is really DJ do? Can't you just play one track? And then, you know, like, oh, this thing, stupid question, because they don't know it. And also, they were wondering, you already wanted to do fashion, and they already didn't like the fact that I was doing fashion because it's very different to their minded and stuff, but they already let me do it. And then 4 years after, I'm like, oh, I want to do music. They were like, what now? You know, they didn't really have this trust on me, but now they are now proud. And I sometimes tell them, I really appreciate that you let me do things what I wanted to do and you believed in me. Even though they weren't happy, they let me do things that I wanted to do, and that's why I'm doing things what I want to do, and I think I'm doing okay.
You said you've returned to South Korea a few times, and you know of a lot of South Korean DJs and artists like yourself. Can you tell me a little bit about the scene there, if there is a scene?
Of course there is a scene. I love this question because I wanted to talk about this. In the beginning, I was quite negative about the scene in Seoul. I was like, you know, they only listen to EDM, and I'm not saying anything bad about it, but I'm just not a big fan of this genre. And this house and techno scene, I didn't have a hope before. But now, a lot of things changed, and there are new clubs called Vert. It's like a little Berghain version of Korea. I was like, wow, a lot of things change. You know, like something that people wouldn't do. You know, like people don't get naked in Korea, and they don't dance like there's no tomorrow. They worry about other people's perspective a little bit too much. And I saw a hope. If I play some kind of fashion event, I play some deep house music, and I got this question a lot. A lot of people came to me and they said, what music is this? And they're interested. They just don't know it, you know? And more I hear, I get this news, there are more medias, there are more magazine, music magazines and online and more clubs. And sometimes I'm surprised to see that a lot of good artists that I like are going Seoul. And when I see them, oh, they're playing Seoul, I'm just really proud. And I think this scene will grow. And I really want to be part of it. You know what I mean? I wish I can give a good influence on this.
You say that you want to go back and be a big part of helping to grow the scene. Have you noticed your fans reacting to you?
Yeah. For example, when I play my own track with 606 that has a Korean word inside. And some people don't know what genre this is, you know, like they don't know what, how, but they just started to like it because I noticed sometimes if I play in Seoul, they come and see me because I do a lot of things in Korea, not just the DJing part, because this music is a little bit not that big scene yet. But I used to do the TV shows and fashion things. So they are interesting to come and see me, but the front row, they don't dance. You know, like I see this, they're like looking at the camera and taking the photos and I'm trying to dance. Come on, dance. And they are just more interested to see what I'm doing. But then after I finish, they're like, can you tell me what this kind of music is? Or they post something about it on blog. I mentioned this to one of those media because the reason why I'm doing other things in Seoul is because if you have a reputation, if you are doing something else, I'm using this for the music part. You know, you can't just push the music, like you listen to this track, listen to that track. But if you have some kind of fame and reputation, and then you let people know about the music, they will follow and listen more. I feel like I'm lucky because my crowd and my fan is really the best because they really appreciate me as a person and my music. And I just realized this because for me, it wasn't really a big deal. But when I played the Cross Festival after party, when I finished it, of course, and Jack and It's Everything, they were giving me a clap, but crowds started shouting my names, and I was obviously appreciated, but then other promoters and DJ told me that I never seen something like this. So, and then I noticed, wow, this is very special, you know? It happened to me a few times, and I started to thinking, I think I have the best crowd, you know? Like, I really mean it. Like, my fans are, of course, there'll be haters too, but I don't really care about that. My job is focusing on my fans, you know? And I feel honored and appreciated to have somebody who came there to support me as a person and as a DJ, as a woman as well.
We just did an interview with Black Coffee, and funny enough, I think you guys actually have a lot in common because he comes from South Africa, and it's pretty rare in media to see someone like him in movies or in music or on stage. And I mean, I get excited when I see an Asian actor in something. It must be an exciting and unifying thing for South Koreans or Asian Europeans, Asian Americans, anyone who sees you. Do you feel that from your fans?
Of course, of course. You know, yesterday I bought one of the best things in LA. I walked past the shop. This clothes has this Korean flag. I was like, this is waiting for me. So I went inside, I just bought it straight away. I was like, okay, I'm going to go to Hollywood and I'm going to take a photo with this Korean flag. Well, first of all, I myself has to be proud of being where I'm from. Although there are a lot of talented, cool, amazing DJs and producers from Asia, I think I'm also lucky enough to be someone who can make my country proud.
I relate to you a lot as an Asian female in dance music. I find that 90% of the time, we're surrounded by people that aren't like us. You know, most of the time it's white males, and we're not really the normal in the scene. How have you felt that throughout your career?
I mean, I sometimes make jokes about it. I'm like, Asians are the best. So, but yeah, I mean, when I also, you can cut it up, but when I met you, I also was very proud. I was like, you work for Mixman? Asian power. Sometimes I think being a female and Asian is kind of bonus. You know, I'm quite proud to be Asian. Sorry, it is a bonus. I'm from Asia, but there are a lot of Asian people. I think I'm doing something quite unique. And I know there's a lot of Asian female DJs or female artists as well, but sometimes I'm surrounding, you know, where we are working, where we are from, where we live, I sometimes feel like unique.
Yeah, I've asked this to several other female DJs. Do you see it as being an advantage or a disadvantage?
That is another question that I got a long time ago. Somebody asked me, being a female, do you get advantage and disadvantage? This question somebody asked me and I kind of answered it back saying, you shouldn't really be asking this question because we passed the gender issue. Yes, there is advantage. Yes, there is a disadvantage. But I don't think there's a point to talk about, you know what, this is good because I'm female and this is not good because I'm female. I'm actually sometimes sad when somebody bring this subject up because I really think the gender issue is done. Of course there is, but at least we can pretend that this is done, you know? So I know being a female, there's a big advantage and big disadvantage, but I don't think there's point of talking about this. I think people know there's advantage of what can be advantage and what can be disadvantage, and people know it. But as an artist, I don't think I should be saying what's good for me and what's not good for me, because in the end, I'm an artist, I play music, I make music, and it shouldn't be really matter about gender.
Yeah, I agree. I once heard Nicole Mudaber say something in response to a question like that. You know, she was saying something along the lines of, you know what, the first step is to stop calling me a female DJ, I'm just a DJ. And that's exactly what you're saying. Your identity is what makes you unique as an artist.
You know, that's another point I wanted to say. In the beginning, you have no idea. Because I'm fashion people, I was always worried about, they're not going to take me seriously. They're not going to take me seriously. So I used to play with only white t-shirt and then denim. You know, I wanted to look serious. But taking the gender issue part, if you have a look, that's a bonus. And then that's in the end, so I changed my mind. You know what? I like clothes. I want to look good. Sometimes Asian people think like I want to look perfect all the time. Right now, the way I think is a bit different. People, they take seriously or not. This is what I got, and this is one of my gifts. And I think, I don't know, this is another bonus side of me. And I'm enjoying this, and I would like to use this. So in the end, I think being myself was important. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's been a really exciting time in your career, and there's been a lot of attention on you as a rising artist. Can you talk a little bit about your year and maybe what's coming up for you?
You know, I'm actually, this year has been really like amazing to me. Even though a lot of people, a friend of mine told me something about 2017 in 2016, and sometimes a lot of things happen faster than I expected. So a lot of things can be like, oh my God, how do I take this? But I'm also a person who accept what's happening right now. And I always think about what can I do better? What can I do next? Okay, I have an EP plan. Okay, I'm very list person. I want to do everything and I like to tick them off. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter what year, I will always have plans. This year so far, I mean, I'm very lucky because everything is going very well and I met a lot of cool people and so many people supporting me, including MixMag as well. As an artist, I can only thing I can say is I would do my best as an artist. This year, I would definitely do one more EP. Last year, I did 4 EP. Some music was supposed to be out a year before, but all happened at the same time. So I did in the end, it was 4. But this year, I was traveling a lot and I did 2 remixes, which will come out before the summer, hopefully. But and then after this tour, I have to focus on, because if I be honest with the touring, I didn't have time for studio. I didn't have time for making new music. But I had I managed to do a 2 remix, which is different to when it comes to remix and your own EP. And hopefully one more EP after summer. Can't tell you which label yet, but that's another plan. And I'm actually open to remix. More I did the remix work, I realize I'm actually enjoying the remix work. So this year will be remixes and 1 EP.
Are you going to keep touring this year?
Of course. I mean, although I have a back problem, but I'm young. So until I can travel, I will travel.
Is there anywhere in specific that you're excited about going to?
Well, I was already excited about this US tour, for sure. It's my first time. And I was like, in the beginning, I said, nobody knows me. But I saw some surprises. So I'm still excited to play here. And I'm doing Asia tour, which I'm super excited because I haven't played in Korea for a while as well. And I'm going to a few of my favorite cities, including Bali. And I've never been to Japan as well. So that'll be my first time. And Bangkok and some Asia tour. That's something I'm really excited. And summertime, festival time. I'm really excited.
You are now locked in with MixMag's own Valerie and Harrison.
Peggy Gu, sounds like she's getting even more busy these days, especially since she's still very much in the underground, you know, trying to emerge. And I don't think it's going to take very long before we see her name on big festival lineups. And also her story about going from South Korea to London, and now she's in Berlin. It's just inspiring stuff.
Yeah, it just goes to show that even if you don't know what your passion or what your journey is yet, follow what you think is right and eventually you'll end up in the right place.
Val, you were really deep in the scene this weekend at Coachella. What went down?
Very deep in the scene. This time the scene was the desert.
Yeah.
Excuse me if my voice sounds a little dusty. I'm still recovering. But yeah, I was over at Coachella the very first weekend this year from Friday all the way through Sunday. Saw some really great sets, which kind of dominated the headlines all weekend. But I have to start off by saying that one of the most exciting parties that I went to was actually away from the festival itself. It was a Solomon and Dixon back-to-back party that happened in Palm Springs in an airplane hangar. It was hosted by Rhonda, which is a big promoter out here in LA.
Dope.
And as you can imagine, it was just super good vibes, great music, and a late night party.
Yeah, those guys have been going B2B a lot recently.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what I really saw was Richie Hawtin's debut of his audiovisual show, Close. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was one of the big highlights of the weekend. A lot of electronic music at Coachella tends to get put into the Yuma tent, which is one of the enclosed stages.
Right.
But every once in a while, there's an act that kind of breaks through and manages to get into one of the bigger tents. Richie Hawtin this year was in the Mojave tent, I believe, and he was debuting his brand new live audio technical show called Close, Spontaneity, and Synchronicity. Mm-hmm. Long title. But basically, it was a performance of him using this new video mapping technology where the people watching him can see this sort of live video rendition of him using, you know, all his equipment on stage. And the idea was to bring the audience closer to him as a DJ.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was saying, you know, certain bands and other big live acts like that, they're not really blocked off to the audience by a deck and CDJs and things like that. So he wanted to switch it up this time.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting. It was very dramatic and a little trippy. There's a video online that Coachella posted that you can watch on mixmag.net right now to get an idea of what it looks like. But yeah, it was a really cool thing. He debuted it at Coachella. It was really exciting to see.
The video mapping technology is really unique. I first actually saw that when Amon Tobin was doing his iSAM show, which is a big structure that he brought on tour.
Mm.
And it's really incredible to see how the video is transformed into a really creative visual. And with Richie Houghton, you know, he's doing a lot of stuff up there on stage with the modular gear he's got. Mm-hmm. And it's a really unique way to see him perform. It's going to be at Movement next, and that's going to be actually the last time you can see it in the States mm-hmm. before it goes around the world to festivals like Pukkle Pop, Creamfields, Melt. It's going to go all over, so be sure to catch it if you can.
Outside of dance music, there was Radiohead was really great, even though they faced a few sound issues on Friday night. I don't know if you heard Harrison, but actually they spent 4 minutes in total silence trying to figure it out, and it was a little stressful. But, you know, all these Coachella performances are a big deal to every single one of these bands. So it doesn't matter. They get over all the little issues, and they still had a great performance anyways. Hans Zimmer was great. You know, he played a bunch of his... he played a bunch of his, you know, iconic soundtrack tunes from Pirates of the Caribbean, The Dark Knight, Inception, with a full orchestra. It was the first time he's ever played like a festival setting. And he himself was rocking guitar front and center, which was an absolute treat to watch. Yeah. And now there's like this inside joke going around on the internet of a video of people trying to dance to his music because it's so epic. But also, you know, you want to dance because you're at a festival, but you really have no idea how to move to his music. So that was pretty hilarious.
It's not really danceable beats, but...
No, but it was a wonderful performance. And then, of course, there was Justice, who absolutely killed it. One of the best performances
I saw. You're
making
me jealous over here, Val.
I know. Jesus. I have to. Every once in a while, LA on the West Coast, we've got something cool, and it happens to be Coachella this time.
Yeah, lucky you.
But enough about that. I'll stop making you jealous. Yeah. But let's move on. Let's talk about another band that actually did not play at Coachella, where I get to be jealous of you, Harrison, because the Gorillaz are doing an incredible amount of promo for their upcoming album called Humans, which I believe releases sometime this month in April. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they're doing is called the Gorillaz Spirit House, which they're doing in partnership with Sonos. Mm-hmm. And it's an interactive installation that allows fans to explore a home that they designed in real life. And it's happening only in New York, Berlin, and Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Are you going to check that out, Harrison?
I'm going to check it out before everybody else does on Thursday. You're going to be able to explore the world of the Gorillaz, which we've only been able to see via their music videos. Mm-hmm. And they're doing a lot of stuff that's more experiential now. They're also doing a live conversation between 2D and Murdoch with Mr. Jam this week as well. So a lot of stuff going on with them. And then they're also doing a 10-episode cartoon.
Yeah, they're doing this 10-episode cartoon series, which we haven't even found out like what the name is or where it'll be, but we know that Jamie Hewlett is the one who's specifically working on it, so it's guaranteed to be really cool and interesting. They're also going on tour in North America, the first time they've announced, they're doing it in 7 years. They've got stops in all the big major cities like Chicago, San Francisco, New York, Vegas, Seattle, LA. You can see the whole tour routing on mixmag.net. But then also, they've been talking a lot about what their show is going to look like. And it seems like, speaking of, you know, technology and live performance and all that, they are working on building a fully animated live show. I'm not sure if it's going to be ready yet for this tour routing because they seem to be suggesting that they're close to making it happen, but not quite yet. But they're basically saying that, you know, the Gorillaz is one of those unique bands that is an animated band, which isn't really a common thing at all. And what they want to eventually do is develop a fully animated 2-hour show.
But speaking of shows, we got some sad news coming out of the United States. Mysteryland has announced the cancellation. It was going to be their fourth year here at Bethel Woods. A lot of people expected it because a lot of the bands were removing the date from their tour schedule. A lot of fans were pretty frustrated after not really hearing much from them over the past few months. And it all just came to a head.
It's really sad because Mysteryland, when they first came out, was that it is held on the original 69 Woodstock grounds.
Yeah, Bethel Woods, yeah.
It's really sad to hear it go.
The first two were just really massive, you know, what you expect from Mysteryland. Massive stages, big crowds, big sound. And it kind of just dwindled off at the tail end there. And it just got a little frustrating. But we'll see if they can make a comeback next year.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
This is Mix Mag on Rotation, direct to your eardrums.
So now we're jumping into some premieres. This week we got Berlin-based producer Capote, recently emerged in the past few years, releasing exclusively on his Toytonix imprint. He's enjoyed some early success, especially after earning the top spot on both TrackSource and Juno for his track The Nose, released at the tail end of 2016. Now, with his first release of the year, he delivers the Body Move EP with a title track that possesses a killer bass line and beautiful piano melody. He lets his background playing keyboard and bass and jazz bands shine on this one, and it's dance floor focused mid-tempo house at its finest.
Label Tap Dance Spirit to deliver the next Kindish Stories release, and the Los Angeles-based producers showcase the scope of their sound with 13 tracks, including both original and remix productions. Amongst the collection is a standout remix of a track by Yoko called Arid. Dance Spirit transformed the original into an atmospheric, desert-like ballad that showcases their hypnotic style. Get lost in this one and be sure to grab it when it's out on April 24th. German duo and him launched their Super Friends label in 2016 with their Tosh EP, featuring four new tracks that would set the stage for what to expect from the imprint. Now, they're giving new life to the material with a remix pack that includes variations from seasoned veteran Acid Poly, up-and-coming Zurich-based producer Jimmy Jules, German duo Manuel Tur and Adrian Hoffman under the Clavis alias, and last but not least, Roman Flugel. Roman's been a favorite at Mixmag for a while now, and his remix is as dreamy and blissful as they come. He pitches the vocal hook deeper and highlights a steady bass melody, flipping the original with somewhat of a retro synth wave motif. There must be something in the water in Germany, because these guys know how to produce brilliant dance music. Check it out.
French duo Cast line up the second part of their double EP titled Dysphoria Euphoria, this time delivering a collection of remixes including the rhythm assault of Anitha's 88.88 remix. As a resident of Blockhouse, Anitha has been a rising talent in the local Parisian scene, releasing on Work Them Records, Anagram, and Reclaim Your City. On the new remix, she lets her deep techno style shine, amping up the rhythm with a more prominent top end while letting the deep bass lay a foundation. This is Heads Down Techno for long nights and early mornings spent in a warehouse. Be sure to pick this one up, which also includes remixes by Luke Hess, Seteok Mas, and AWB.
This next track is called Some of Them from Amtrak and a vocalist named Melly, who met at a Smirnoff Sound Collective retreat, which brought together up-and-coming producers with mentors to promote inclusivity and diversity in dance music. They recorded the vocal in one take, so this track is funky and raw, and it's coming out on an EP called True Value on Amtrak's own label, Openers, on April 21st.
You're listening to Mix Mag on rotation.
Now on to the weekend report. This weekend in New York City, we got Golden Record bringing in Chicago legend Gene Hunt with support from awesome local selectors and Analog Soul, Arias, Jam for DS, and more. Or you could hit up Shemansky for a blast of techno from Secret Cinema and Charlotte DeWitt. Charlotte will also be playing The Lab NYC on Friday. Then Saturday, it's all about Black Market with Intervision's label boss, Dixon, at the decks all night long. There's also Goody at Shemansky, Truncate at Brooklyn Bazaar, and Jonas Rathman at Good Room. So you can't really go wrong either way.
This weekend is another exciting one here in LA. Of course, weekend two of Coachella is happening in Indio, but back in the city at Sound Nightclub, it's a great weekend. Tonight, we have Tale of Us and Red Axis, Friday with Maya Jane Coles, Saturday, the Martinez Brothers and Marcus Wyatt, and then elsewhere at the Mayan tonight, we have Moderat, Friday, we've got Floating Points at El Rey, and Saturday, we've got Amin Edge and Dance and Walker and Royce at Exchange LA.
And in London, it's a stacked weekend once again with the Black Madonna, Derek Carter, and Young Marco at XOYO on Friday. And there's also Too Many DJs in Fort Romeo at Fabric, which is awesome selection. Then there's Detroit Swindle all night long at Phonox. It's always going to be a good time. Saturday belongs to Printworks. You got to check out DJ Cozy, Motor City Drum Ensemble, Jeremy Underground, and Antal. Plus, my Brooklyn crew of Sublimate will be taken to the decks as well. Be sure to check out the homies Turtlebug and Sagatsky. Big up to those guys.
And finally, we're over in Berlin for this weekend. Berghain is absolutely stacked. Beginning on Saturday and going through the weekend, sounds will be curated by Ben Klock, Anthony Parasol, Tobias, Dr. Rubenstein, Len Faki, and Ryan Elliott, or hit up Trezor for Cab Drivers, Brother, and more. About Blank is a solid choice as well, with Paverlist, Stevio, and CZB Live, and a Mixmag favorite with Shanti Celeste at the decks.
All right, and that's what's going on around the world in Clubland. I hope you all have a lot of fun out there. I'm Harrison here in Brooklyn.
And I'm Valerie here in LA.
And this has been Mixmag on Rotation.
Thanks for listening to Mixmag on Rotation. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We'll be back soon with more buzz from the world of dance music. Stay locked. This podcast was produced by Full English Post.